Grace and peace to you, beloveds, in the name of our triune God who dwells among us, whether we're on mountains or in valleys or ever in between. Amen. So the reason I have these really fun hiking poles and a backpack and not these shoes, but I've become in love with like hiking shoes, is that 10 years ago, holy Moses, it was 10 years ago, my friend Angie and I decided to embark on an adventure together. Some of you may have heard me talk about this before. She was getting ready to take some time off after a challenging first call in ministry. I was eager for some time away from my own challenging season of life. And while Angie came up with the idea first, and she was prepared to go it alone, I decided I'm tagging along. So we made a semblance of a plan to meet in Chicago and fly to Spain and spend 10 days walking on the Camino de Santiago in northern Spain. We made that plan in March, and we landed at the end of May, so we clearly were like, we're ready to go. Much of this challenge, of this pilgrimage hike, which if you're not familiar with the Camino, just Google Camino at some point, and you're gonna wanna do it, I promise. Much of the challenge is not just that it is a long hike. If you do the whole stretch, it starts in the south of France and ends up basically at the Atlantic Ocean through northern Spain and can take like 3 months to do. We took 10 days. Our goal was 100 miles, which was a lot. But it's also very mountainy, especially on kind of the eastern and north part. And we opted to begin at a part of the Camino that was still in some of that mountainy area, but we knew we were gonna eventually like get down so it was more rolling hills. We figured start really hard and kind of easy-ish. And then we'd feel like extra tough because we did it. But at the time I lived in Wisconsin, not really known for, you know, mountain terrain or altitude. Angie was living in Ohio, similarly flat-ish. And while we knew we needed to go and do something, we were not really prepared for what we were gonna do. Even though I went to REI and bought all the things, I thought I was ready. I even thought I had broken in my hiking shoes that I had purchased for this trip, and this was proven wrong on the second day. Yeah, when we had a 19-mile hike planned, most of which was up and down at a fairly significant altitude, especially for us from Wisconsin and Ohio. And it was on one of these upward bits when my feet were just dying on the inside. And we realized that we were nowhere near where we wanted to be. We were also really far from any sort of town or any sort of place that could offer us sustenance or a bio break, if you will. Now, Angie and I had both been camping in our lives, so spending that kind of time in nature was not a foreign concept, but it was not ideal, we'll just say that. And it took us a bit of courage to find a location and then cheer each other on from a distance. And I tell you that the moment we both did that, it was a monumental one for us. To this day, when either of us is having a rough day, we remind each other that because we spent that kind of time on the top of a mountain, we can do anything. We were transformed and clearly bonded together forever by participating in an activity neither of us really wanted to do, but we absolutely needed to do. And I'd love to say that that was like the peak of the hard part of the hike, and that it was a piece of cake afterwards, but it wasn't. Because again, my boots did not agree with my feet. It took my feet actually like a very long time, like years to heal after this. I was discouraged more time than I would have liked. I couldn't stop worrying about where we were going to end up for the night, because part of the Camino is that you don't really plan for like where you're gonna go. You just kind of stop when you can, when you want to. And so we never really knew where we were going or how far we had come. I couldn't stop thinking about all the stuff that was back home, and it drove me crazy to think about all of these things all the time. It wasn't until, I think, about the fourth or maybe fifth day that Angie and I decided we had been trying to walk together this whole time, and she was a bit more fit than I am, and bless her, she was very calm with me. But we decided we needed to take our own time and our own paces. So we decided we'll meet up at whatever the next spot is that has either a restaurant or a market or a restroom, as it were. So as I was walking by myself, it was beautiful, hilly countryside, and I realized that I was surrounded by fields and farms, and I had a moment of clarity that for these 4 or 5 days that we had been hiking, I couldn't remember what anything looked like. I felt so overwhelmed by all the things going on in my brain that I was not paying attention to where I was. And so I had this moment of clarity, this sense of calm and peace that came with this realization that I just needed to let go of all of those worries and just be in the present moment. I was intentionally not taking a lot of pictures because I wanted to be in the moment, and it took me 5 days to realize what that actually meant. And that what was making walking so hard wasn't just the physical endurance of it, but trying to anticipate what was coming and the anxiety of things I couldn't control back home, those things I realized were heavier on my body and my brain than the pack that was on my back, because we also had packs with all of our things in it. I realized I had been missing out on what was right in front of me. And if I was going to dwell on the things in my mind instead of paying attention to the present moment, it was impossible to imagine getting to the end of the Camino, and I would have been super discouraged. So while my feet were still quite grumpy, and physically it was still challenging, once I got into that kind of Zen mindset, to borrow from our Buddhist friends, it was actually quite a more pleasant experience. And I wish I could have bottled it up, or if some way of returning to that sense of peace and clarity with a snap of my fingers whenever I wanted, anytime after that. But as soon as I got home, within at least a week of getting home, all of the troubles and the stress took over again. I was back in the thick of my reality, and I longed for those days of Zen and just walking along, wondering what was around me. I share this because my Camino journey was not necessarily a transfiguration experience. We didn't see any like prophets of old or even Jesus or the cloud of God. We did not have any of those supernatural, sparkly, divine experiences. But it helps me understand how Peter and James and John reacted to their own experience. And that Peter's immediate response was to ask for something, or at least to create something that would help make that moment last, or at least an opportunity to offer a commemoration or memorialize this unexplainable experience of seeing Jesus all shiny in glory, and Moses and Elijah. He wanted to make sure this moment never ended by asking to build a tent, to build an altar. I wanted to bottle up my mind. We all have our own things in some way where we want to create altars or shrines or monuments that mark meaningful moments in our lives. Often so we can come back to them time and time again, not just to remember the thing for what it was, but perhaps in hope that we can regain those moments or return or recreate the experience because it was so meaningful for us in the moment. But God has something different in mind, all for the trio, for us as well, because the idea of building 3 tents for this experience to dwell in is cut short by a cloud overwhelming them and the voice of God calling them back to the beginning of Jesus' ministry, the moment when Jesus and John the Baptizer were in the Jordan River and all of creation paused as a dove descended and Jesus was first introduced as the beloved, the chosen one, in whom the Creator is well pleased. And so it's in the thick of this cloud on top of the mountain that God reignites this call of Jesus' ministry, a ministry that is not lived out on the top of mountains or steeped in the past, but a ministry centered on the present and calling truth to the powers that are working hard at keeping people separated from each other and far from the kingdom that God has in mind. where equity and inclusion and quality of relationships are the mark of God's reign being realized. We heard in Exodus, Mount Moses, mountain's top experience, where he also spent time engulfed in a cloud of God. But when he was done and he went back down the mountain, he was with the people who had escaped Egypt with him. While he had to tell his community about God's commandments and the experience that he had, and while he was walking down, his face was glowing, he was bringing to them the idea and the hope of their Creator that these rules and guidelines would help pave a way for equity and inclusion and quality relationships with one another. I don't know if we ever think about the commandments, at least the top 10 that we all, most of us know, as those kinds of things, but maybe we should, or could. I won't say should, that's a mandate. I invite you to think about it that way. We also hear a little bit about Elijah, but we don't know that Elijah also has a mountain experience. His is more a prophetic one in 1 Kings chapter 19, where it tells of Elijah's own search for God in the midst of a mountain and looking for God in a windstorm and in the rumble of an earthquake, and yet is only when Elijah encounters God's spirit in the still, quiet silence that he is called back to what God has called for him to do, even though it means people are hunting him down. Crazy things happen on the mountains, my friends, but crazy things happen wherever we are. Because it is this moment on this mountain where Peter, John, and James are presented with this reminder that their ancestors in faith have also been at their own precipice moment, their kind of pivot hinge experience. And so maybe it's helpful for us too to realize that their experience, although unique to them, is not unique to the history of humanity. And that our own experiences, although unique, are not the only challenging and hard times in the history of humanity. Because there have been times of great challenge and difficulty throughout human history, things that have been written down, things that have been lost to the galaxy. And the thing is, none of them have been more impossible than the ones before them. Throughout it all, including pivots of history that have marked significant change, not only have we been there before, but God has been with us through all of it too. So we can face these joys, these unexpected challenges, we can endure and find our place because God has been faithful to our ancestors and is faithful to us too. God will be faithful to those who come after us, who will face their own unforeseeable events with the assurance that their struggle is not theirs alone. And so as they embark down the mountain without having put up any tents or altars, but only this now fleeting memory of a moment where they were with Moses and Elijah, and they saw Jesus in radiant glory, where they heard the voice of God enshrouded in a cloud, it's then that Jesus, having comforted them in their fear, walks with Peter, James, and John back down the mountain. And it's kind of a shame that we end with them on the mountain, because if you keep reading through the rest of the chapter, the very next thing they do is they meet up with the rest of their disciple group, and they are surrounded by people who are seeking healing and wholeness, and immediately Jesus is back into his ministry of restoration and inclusion. And we know, though, thankfully, that while their reality was right back with them, they did not forget. And I think we can trust this because they were told not to talk about it until after the Son of Man came back from the dead. And now we have this lovely narrative of them on the mountain. In Matthew's gospel narrative, it's also in the Mark's, it's in Luke's, and we hear it echoed in this letter to Peter. We have this moment for us as kind of a hinge or a pivot as we now look to the next 40 plus days of the season of Lent. It starts on Wednesday when we are asked to face our mortality with a mark of the ash cross on our foreheads, a reminder that our baptismal promise has been made with water and is one that God is with us with an unending love, and it will remain with us even into life eternal. In the journey that we are about to face, we will hear again some of the big moments of Jesus' ministry, the ones that will make it impossible for us to ignore Jesus' power and glory and divinity, the same stories that at his time lead to his arrest and crucifixion and death, because power and glory joined with Jesus' humanity come into direct conflict with the powers of inequality and exclusion that are reigning. And so as beautiful and dazzling as the view from the mountaintop is, it may also skew our vision from the collective encounter of God. A collective encounter of God that is met in the reality of our daily lives, where we are full of overwhelm and difficulty, and yet called to be a community of love and care and dignity. And so I invite you, friends, into this journey where we will let our hearts be opened to God's call once again. And I want to share this poem by Karen Kaiser called, Let Our Hearts. Let our hearts see the hurting, the battered and bruised, shattered and scarred, lost and longing. Let our hearts break what was built to burden, dismantle the systems of injustice that oppress and imprison. Let our hearts drive our faith and our deeds as we rise from the rubble and do the work. So shine on, beloveds, with one another. Let our hearts be open to God's surprising glory. Amen.